Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, our election 2024 coverage continues. What are the important dates for voters in Pennsylvania? Is there early voting in the state? When are mail-in and absentee ballots actually counted? We speak with Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer about the election process at the Wayne County Bureau of Elections. Robin Skibber is the Democrat challenging incumbent Republican Jeff Olsemer to Pennsylvania's 139th legislative district seat. The district comprises parts of Pike and Wayne counties, including the boroughs of Matamoras, Milford, and Hawley. We'll meet Robin Skibber later. Plus, Janice Adams reflects on how public radio addresses a world in turmoil and a new experimental work at NACL, God is Your Typewriter. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Hurricane Milton is moving away from Florida and into the Atlantic Ocean. It's left catastrophic destruction and death behind it. The hurricane made landfall south of Tampa last night. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says more than 80,000 people were in shelters overnight. He says authorities have started to assess the damage and see who needs help.
Rescue missions have been underway throughout the night. State search and rescue teams report at least 48 individuals have been rescued as of 0630. National Guard search and rescue teams have worked overnight and successfully executed rescues of families and pets on the West Coast and from the destruction of the tornadoes in the central and eastern parts of Florida.
At least four people have been killed by tornadoes in St. Lucie County on Florida's eastern Atlantic coast. Dozens of tornadoes spawned by the hurricane raked the state yesterday. Officials are checking damage in Tampa. From member station WUSF, Kathy Carter reports the city's mayor is urging people to stay indoors so crews can start repairs.
Heavy rainfall and hurricane-force winds may have subsided, but the dangers remain, with hundreds of downed trees and power lines reported across the city and flash flood watches expected to remain in effect for much of the day. Tampa Mayor Jane Castor says roads are unsafe and residents should not attempt to venture out.
Definitely don't drive around. We survived through Milton. We can't lose anybody in the aftermath, so please be careful out there.
Castor says the city is sending drones up to assess where to begin cleanup efforts. Milton dumped incredible amounts of rain, around 17 inches, in parts of Hillsborough County. For NPR News, I'm Kathy Carter in Tampa.
Officials in Tampa and Sarasota are telling residents to conserve water. They say the hurricane broke some water mains. Pinellas County is just to the west of Tampa on the Gulf Coast. The Pinellas County Sheriff says all access points to the county are now closed. Stocks opened lower this morning as the Labor Department reports somewhat higher inflation in September than forecasters expected. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 90 points in early trading.
Consumer prices in September were up 2.4% from a year ago. That's a smaller annual increase than the previous month, but slightly larger than forecasters had predicted. So-called core inflation, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, rose in September to 3.3%. Sticky inflation could complicate the Federal Reserve's job as it weighs how quickly to lower interest rates this fall. New applications for unemployment benefits also jumped last week, although some of that increase may reflect applications that would have been filed earlier had it not been for Hurricane Helene. Social Security recipients will get a cost of living increase of 2.5% next year. That's about $47 more a month than the average retirement check. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow's down 64 points. This is NPR.
And this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno on Radio Chatskill. It's only 25 days until the election, and we're keeping you connected this election season. We know we have listeners in two states with different election rules and deadlines. So here to help us out with some Pennsylvania dates, deadlines, and rules is Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer. Jocelyn, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you for being here. Thanks for being here to help our Pennsylvania voters with some key dates. How are things going so far as we start out here in our conversation in Wayne County? Are you guys getting a lot of requests for information, early voting? Tell us what's going on.
We get requests all day, every day, Tim. And things are really picking up in terms of activity as we get closer and closer to the election. We do have an incredible staff here who's very happy to take calls, speak to our voters, and answer questions to the general public to help explain the election process and the mail-in ballot process, how it all works, address any questions or concerns they have. We Wayne County Commissioners are also the Board of Elections. We too also try to get out as much information as we can in our public meetings, and things have been very, very busy. It's a federal election year, so we are we are up and running.
You're up and running and busy, and in Pennsylvania there are slightly different rules. One of those is about early voting. Pennsylvania does have early voting, but there's a kind of a process to that. Can you talk a little bit about how that works there?
Yeah, of course I can. And there had been some talk about early voting starting September 16. And we wanted to make sure people in Wayne County knew that that date was not applicable for us, because right here in Pennsylvania, there were court decisions on whether or not Cornel West was going to be on the ballot as a presidential independent candidate. And when the court deemed that he would not be because of incomplete paperwork or such, the ballots couldn't go to print until, I think it was after September 16th. So at that time, ballots were printed. We were able then to begin mailing out everybody who had requested a mail-in ballot, and that didn't even happen until like September 20th or 22nd. So early voting means that if you're a registered voter, you can literally walk into our elections office and you can complete an application for a mail-in ballot. That can be processed on the spot. The only thing we like people to know is it does take a little while. It's not like walk in, walk out. Once you've completed your application for a mail-in ballot, we review that application. We send it off to the state. The state does their verification part. And then you can be handed an actual ballot and vote it in our office and return it right then and there. The whole process probably takes about a half an hour. That is happening. That can happen. That's one way to do it, Tim. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that this is sometimes called over-the-counter voting or on-demand voting in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't even heard those yet, but yeah. And that's one way you can do it. The other thing you can do is request your mail-in ballot. It will be mailed to your Pennsylvania home address, not a P.O. box. You can complete your ballot at home and mail it back to us. You can also vote in person on Election Day, Tim. So those are the ways that you can vote, and we are doing our very best to encourage everyone to participate in this election. In my opinion, it's never been easier to vote or more accommodating in the state of Pennsylvania.
And just to be clear, there's not a voting machine set up for early voters. If you want to vote on a voting machine, you do that on Election Day. And the last possible day to vote early on demand, is this way we've been describing, is October 29th, right? That's also the deadline to request that mail-in ballot?
That's your last day to request the mail-in ballot, October 29th. Anyone who is voting by mail has to return that to us no later than 8 p.m. on Election Day. There's only one drop box in Wayne County, and that is in our courthouse lobby. It's under camera. It's also under the eyes of our sheriff's deputies. And that's for security purposes. So if you have concerns about mail, and please, please, please don't wait to mail your ballot. Please send them as soon as you're able. But if you have concerns about the timing of the mail, you can drop it off in that drop box, or you can drop it off in our elections office on the third floor. Tim, I just want to jump back real quick, if I could, to something you said about voting machines. In Wayne County, we vote by paper ballot. The only machines that we use are counting the ballots. They are scanners. They are not connected to the internet. There's about four of them. They are active the night of on Election Day only to scan actual ballots. So even though everybody's already voting in our office, those envelopes are not opened. They are stored per voting district and precinct where they vote. They are not opened or counted until Election Day as per law.
And how long do you think that process will take? Are you expecting that it will take a little longer, or how are you kind of anticipating to get those things counted right when the polls close?
So 4 years ago, the participation rate of our registered voters was 78.1. So it tends to be pretty high. In Wayne County, we have 35,400 registered voters, approximately. We already have 7,300 requests for mail-in ballots. That's 21% of our registered voters. So what we can do is on Election Day morning, we're allowed to open and start scanning any of the mail-in ballots. Those totals aren't reported. They are just scanned. So we usually can complete that process before polls close at 8 o'clock at night. At 8 o'clock at night, we start counting all the ballots from Election Day. And usually, and no matter what, we're here till it's done, Tim. So it's anywhere between, 11 p.m. and 1 p.m., 1 a.m., we're here until it's done.
And you mentioned security of election workers across the United States faced an unprecedented wave of threats in the last presidential election. What are you confident that this election in Wayne County is safe, secure, and is there anything that's being done to protect the Bureau of Elections workers and clerks and poll workers?
So I want to answer that question first by saying safety is the utmost priority for us. Do I have concerns? I have concerns because of the noise and the hype that's out there. However, what we have been doing to protect people is the same thing we've been doing for decades, which is, and Tim, we're lucky it's a rural community because your average poll worker has been doing that job for 20 years. We're small communities where people know each other. In my opinion, Wayne County has a very high standard of decency toward each other. We see very little nonsense on Election Day, despite the hype. Every now and then, there's something, but there hasn't been anything that has required any unusual response. So we ask people to be decent. We ask people to respect each other. We ask people to honor all of the laws in place around voting and not disturbing voters 10 feet from the door of the voting location. Simple things like that, Tim. Mm-hmm. Here, our elections office is in the courthouse. Our courthouse is protected by sheriff's deputies and a metal detector. Again, I have no concerns there. I hope that that never changes, that we don't have incident here. But I encourage everybody to be respectful, courteous, safe. The more we have people mailing in their ballots and participating by mail, it does lessen the amount of people that are at the polling location, so there aren't long lines. I think that's a good thing. So that's, from my perspective, we've been fairly lucky, but everybody's diligent and careful, and they know what they're doing, and that's extremely important.
Let's talk about the key dates leading up to the election, only 25 days away. Last day to register for the election.
October 21. So if you're not a registered voter in Wayne County and you've lived here, please come and see us. You can walk in the door if you need assistance and register to vote so you can participate in this and every election in Wayne County. Democracy, I always say, Tim, is better served by greater participation.
And we mentioned the last day to apply for an absentee and mail-in ballot is October 29th. The last day for the County Board of Elections, Bureau of Elections, to receive voted mail-in and civilian absentee ballots is Election Day by 8 p.m. Is that right?
That is correct. And if you have not mailed it, then you have to drop it off in person. Again, we have an election drop box ballot in our lobby of the courthouse.
And what are the poll times in Pennsylvania on Election Day, November 5th?
We open 7 a.m. and they close at 8 p.m. And the other thing I want to just remind our viewers, Tim, is whenever you complete an application for a mail-in ballot, if you're going to vote that way, there's a couple things I want to stress. When you apply for a mail-in ballot, there is an option for your email address. Please, please, please include your email address because that's the state system. If there is an issue with your ballot, if it's returned and it is faulty, it does not have a proper date or a signature, they will email you that so that they will let you know if there's an issue, so you have opportunity to correct it. That email request is vital. It is not going to be sold to retailers. So please, please use your email address. They'll also email you when your ballot is received in the elections office if you've delivered it by mail. So if someone has delivered their, dropped off their mail-in ballot in the mail and it isn't received, they can still go to the polls on election day. There is a provisional ballot option designed to always accommodate the voter.
Yeah.
So that is something that we have to take those back to the office and verify. That's something that can't be verified on site. So, for example, if somebody says, you know, I'm here because my mail-in ballot wasn't received, they can have a provisional back in the courthouse. We're then able to verify, yep, they were sent a mail-in ballot. It was never received. Therefore, we can count this provisional ballot. So there's all kinds of reasons why a provisional are issued and things that need to be verified back in our office. Are they registered? Are they a resident of that district? Are they, you know, all of the things that verify a Pennsylvania voter. So if they're eligible and able to vote, the provisional's counted. If they are not, we don't count them. There's no black and white here.
And I know you have to get going, but before we go, quickly, folks with disabilities who need assistance can get special assistance as well.
Yes, of course they can. And we ask in that case to just call our elections office, because we can, even dropping off at our ballot box is up a couple flights of stairs, or it's not couple flights of stairs, but a couple of steps. So we will have someone come down and meet you to help you if you need it. All you have to do is call our Bureau of Elections office, and I'll give you that number. For any questions or concerns that you have, that number is 570-253-5978. We are here to serve you, to help you. If anyone has questions about our elections process, please call us first and make sure we help answer those questions and give you the confidence you need to participate in this election and to make sure your vote is counted.
And that phone number, the director's email, applications, more information, even how to find your polling location, all on the Wayne County Bureau of Elections website. That's waynecountypa.gov. We've been speaking to Wayne County Commissioner Jocelyn Kramer. Thank you so much for taking the time to inform our Pennsylvania voters in Wayne County what's going on for the election coming up soon.
Tim, thanks for the time and the opportunity. I really appreciate it. We're doing everything we can to serve our community and get good information out there, and we appreciate you being a part of that.
You are welcome. Thank you. And if you are listening to us outside Wayne County, in another county in Pennsylvania, check with your local Bureau of Elections. Or if you're listening to us in New York, check with your Board of Elections for all that information as well. As we mentioned, things differ state to state. You're listening to Radio Chatskill, and our election coverage continues with our candidate profiles. Robin Schooley Skibber is a lifelong Pike County resident with over two decades of service to the community and stepping into the political arena as the candidate for the 139th district in the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives. Having recently retired as the director of the Pike County Area Agency on Aging, Skibber is running on the Democratic ticket against the Republican candidate, incumbent Representative Jeff Olsemer from Sterling in Wayne County. Radio Catskills Patricio Rubio spoke to Skibber about her life in public service and why she thinks she should be the next assembly member for Pennsylvania's 139th.
Robin, welcome to the program. You have over 22 years as the director of the Pike County Area Agency on Aging. So let's talk about maybe healthcare, because that's a big concern in your district here. How do you plan to improve healthcare accessibility and mental healthcare services in your district?
Thank you, Patricia. I appreciate being able to talk with you today. I believe the access to medical services is driving a lot of the concerns with people. Obviously, emergency services, mental health crisis situations, law enforcement, things like that, where in Pike County, you're constantly going out of the county. So you're going over to Port Jervis, New York, you're going to Newton, New Jersey, you're going to Lehigh or St. Luke's in Monroe County or Wayne Memorial, and of course over in Scranton. And what that does is causes people, for one thing, not everyone's insurance covers things in different places. And for one thing, the mental health joinder is Carbon Monroe and Pike. So try to stay in that area when you're using like a systems approach. So it affects a lot, obviously. And then if somebody gets into a medical emergency and they're in a hospital, the next step is either bring them home or rehab or whatever. And that, again, is also affected about where they ended up. So the commissioners are working with some public entities to try to address this and start with an urgent care and maybe a small hospital. But it really affects everything from transportation, people driving, people going to the pharmacy, and maybe in a big city, going to the doctor and going to the pharmacy could be a 2-hour deal. But in Pike County, it's usually a 4 to 6 hour ordeal.
When it comes to expanding healthcare options for seniors and people with disabilities in your district, so what are some of the priorities you want to get off the ground once you're elected?
I think bringing in a health network that can do wraparound services. And if they have acute care, do they have rehab services? Do they have transitional housing? Everything is a driver when it comes to that. People want to be able to visit their person. They want to be able to have the best care. And when it's segmented, as it has been, it's very difficult.
And you just talked about going out of state or even out of county for your services there. I always hear folks who talk about that say sometimes folks who need the care will sometimes go without the care just because they don't want to deal with the sort of the transportation issues or driving out of county there, which could really hinder the healthcare of the district there. So let's take a look at the environment, which is a concern for all of us in the area. So we talked about how beautiful a day it is and how the weather is great and all those things that folks like to enjoy when they come to this area. What are some of the environmental protection measures that are most important to you and how you would implement them to sort of ensure sustainability in our region?
I want to say there's a lot of good policies on the books right now. We have some of the cleanest waterways in the area. The Delaware River has been such a destination for not only fishing people, kayakers, hikers, but also the lakes. And I think that has to do with the fact that Pike and Wayne County commissioners and municipal leaders and people in general in the Delaware Highlands and a lot of the conservation districts they put it as a priority to make sure that our water is safe, our streams are good. And I think that's why the fracking issue got shut down before it started. It wasn't saleable in our area. But I think also by protecting it, we've become a destination. That has helped our tourism, our ecotourism, where people are coming to climb, to hike, to meet up with their friends and just be outside. Promised Land State Park grows exponentially in the summer season because people love the fact they can come and picnic with their families. And it's just super nice. They're getting around to opening up Childs State Park and down in Raymondskill. Devastated with the storms over the last couple of years. So these type of things drive people coming here and spending their tourist dollars in our area. So I think it's very important to protect it. And I think, as I said before, a lot of the leaders are aware of that. And we have one of the highest percentages of state game lands and state forest and natural areas going across the Commonwealth. I think maybe Cameron, Elk, and McKean are the only counties that beat us with the amount of natural areas we have.
Let's take a turn over to economic development. Like many rural areas, the 139th District in PA struggles with economic development. So what plans do you have to boost the economic development in the district, including supporting small businesses and improving local infrastructure?
I think being somebody that people knocked on the door of the aging office over the years looking for what we looked like with statistics is we had a higher than average percentage of older adults with a lower than average number of senior high rises or long-term care facilities. But as the people started to do their research and they would meet with the county officials, the infrastructure of the septic and water became an inhibitor. So that is being worked on, and how the municipalities handle it to, create like a central sewage line and draw some of the businesses. The other thing for small businesses, I think we could help employers help their staff, like give them some type of tax incentives to provide some kind of benefits for their staff and create an incentive for them to get some skilled workers instead of our workers driving across the Delaware into other places to work.
On education, the district faces challenges in providing adequate vocational training and special education services to prepare students for local job opportunities. Resources for mental health support in schools also insufficient. What initiatives would you take to expand the vocational training and mental health services in the schools to ensure the students are well prepared for the future?
I think our school districts in the area are very, very professional. I think there's people move here due to the fact that of the special education programs we have in Delaware Valley, Wong, Paulpak, Western Wayne, but they need the support. And the budgets, if you looked at the state budget for education, I think it's like hundreds and hundreds of pages, but there is money is in there for career technology centers. There's for special education, for mental health. And it's just how the districts can work on putting them out there. I know our local career technologies centers being looked at, they're looking for maybe federal or state, I think probably more federal than state money to finally use what we're using now for VOTech, but expand on it and share with the other school districts so that the students have more options. There's more options for allied health services. We have one of the best automotive vocational programs at Wall and Paulpak. I have to give a shout out to them. And the culinary programs in the schools, they're phenomenal. And we have to grow that and help the instructors in the school districts provide a space and let the public know. A lot of the taxpaying public, including the seniors, don't realize that what the school districts are doing. I think that's probably one of the best selling agents, is if you know your neighbor's kid or your grandkid is going to be able to come out after getting their high school diploma and go right into a pretty decent paying job.
Yeah. And one of the concerns that most folks coming out of college or getting a job is housing, to find housing. The rising cost of housing in our region is pushing some of the families out of their communities, on top of what's going on also with healthcare in the district. All these things factors into whether folks want to live and work where they grew up. There is a shortage of affordable housing options for lower income families and older adults. What things you would do to address the affordable housing crisis and ensure that residents can continue to live and thrive within their own communities?
That's a great question. And I think after the pandemic, we saw an expansion in all our population, Sullivan County in New York, Wayne and Pike and Monroe, with people who were able to work remotely and they liked being here and they didn't have to get up in the morning and drive. So we have had a bump in people wanting to live here and they're working. But that, again, cuts down on the amount of rentals that might be available for other people. And some of the short-term rentals has affected the housing stocks. If people can use it for short-term rentals, they might not be wanting to have a long-term rentals. The rental stock did get affected by that as well. It's not an easy fix. I think some of the more creative approaches with housing, building smaller housing units in a smaller footprint than what we used to call the McMansions from 20 years ago, they were almost unaffordable to maintain just for heating and maintenance alone. And it helped the builders. And there's programs that the Housing Finance or PHFA has in Pennsylvania that train people. They give instructions. They give resource guides. And why would you want to become a landlord or how to do home inspections? So there's a lot. I think there's a lot of untapped resources, too, in our counties. We have the just not the housing authority that people go to, but the actual home repair program, the CDBG funds that I know Pike and Wayne have been very good at utilizing because of the aging of the houses. With people, our seniors are living in houses that were vacation homes, and now they're their primary residences. And some of them are the upside down houses. So you go in the bottom, but they live upstairs. And that's okay when you're young like me. But when you get, it's to try to, you know, think about that long term. Is this going to be a sustainable way to stay safe in a home?
Let's turn our eye to something that affects us all. Like many areas of Pennsylvania, includes and also areas in Sullivan County, New York, the 139th District has been impacted by the opioid epidemic. This crisis affects the public health, safety, and just the community well-being. How do you plan to address the opioid epidemic and provide more resources for addiction prevention and recovery service within your district?
I think destigmatizing it, for one thing, and having people understand that these are not people out in the street corner selling drugs, so to speak. These are things that are in everyone's house. These blend over to mental health issues and substance abuse and use in families. And I just, by destigmatizing it and talking about it and letting everyone know there's resources. Churches have groups. Our drug and alcohol folks have numerous programs. We've got more recovery areas, but it still seems to be something people whisper about rather than are proud of the fact that somebody's getting help. And with my time at the aging office, it affected us with our caregivers because some of their caregivers, they could have been family members, grandkids, or a private staff who would appropriate some of the narcotics and create, they were stealing not only the narcotics, but then monies to go buy more, which it became a big issue at our protective services division. And then also created a lot of our older adults to become prime caregivers of their grandkids and other relatives because the parents were getting in trouble. They're getting arrested. And unfortunately, some would overdose, and it affects people. And that's why it's not just one little part of our population. Fentanyl and all the different opiates and addictive drugs, they permeate throughout not only the family, but the community and the counties.
Yeah, as I said, it's tragic that we all are facing here in our area. Let's take a look at climate. We talked a little bit about the environment, the increasing frequency of extreme weather events such as flooding and severe storms. The 109th district is vulnerable to climate change impacts as we are in rural districts. But what measures would you take to help the district become more resilient to climate change, particularly in protecting homes and infrastructure from flooding?
Well, I would have to turn back to some of the programs that the conservation districts do with stormwater runoff. And with building the municipalities do inspections when people are putting in impermeable, like asphalt and macadam versus gravel or something that would allow some of the leaching. And again, education, but also people in general to cut down on the amount of the carbon footprint, if you will, the use of the vehicle, riding your bike more, or going to a town, parking, and maybe walking 3 or 4 blocks to get your things done. It's a lifestyle change, but it has to start somewhere. We recycle, I compost. I'm a little vigilant about all of it, but what you can do. And people that go to thrift stores versus going to buy brand new stores that get shipped from another country, which causes more fuel use. So I feel very passionate. There's a lot more we all can do. And that being conscious of it and saying, I really want a decent world for my grandchildren or my kids, do something about it.
Now, lastly, Robin, before we go, we ask all the candidates, of course, and I asked you last time, why should voters vote for you over your opponent in this election season?
I think I have a proven record. I think it's very important as a woman right now because we only have a 1-seat majority. And in relation to healthcare and medical services, my other passion is the fact that women don't have any services or reproductive access in our area. The many of the providers are two or three counties away if they needed to do any kind of Planned Parenthood or abortion access, late term, whatever, women get into trouble. We have one seat majority, and it's very possible that if my opponent gets in, he's been supported by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, and that feels like that would put us backwards with women's reproductive access.
We're talking to the Democratic candidate, Robin Schooley Skibber, on the running for the assembly for the 139th district in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for talking to me about your thoughts on the issues, and good luck this November.
Thank you, Patricio. I enjoyed it.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And we've reached out to Representative Jeff Olsemer, the Republican incumbent in Pennsylvania's 139th district. But so far, he has not returned our requests for an interview. We're going to continue to try, and we hope to bring you a conversation with him on air before Election Day. And our election coverage continues tonight with New York's 19th congressional district debate. Republican U.S. Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival, Josh Riley, are facing off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. New York's 19th congressional district debate is tonight live at 7 on Radio Catskill. Listen on air or stream it at WJFFradio.org. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Janice Adams is here. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Radio Catskill's election coverage continues with New York's 19th Congressional District debate tonight. Representative Mark Molinaro and challenger Josh Riley face off in a live debate to determine the leadership of one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live tonight at 7 on Radio Catskill or stream it live, WJFFradio.org. That's New York's 19th Congressional District debate, produced as part of a regional media consortium including WAMC and WNYT News Channel 13 Albany, tonight on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Emmy Award-winning author, producer, and journalist Janice Adams hosts The Janice Adams Show right here on Radio Catskill every Saturday morning at 11. We regularly check in with her about her shows, but today she's reflecting on a world in turmoil and public radio's role in meeting these moments, highlighting the no easy soundbites value of public radio and the conversations listener support makes possible. Janice Adams, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, thank you for joining us. And, you know, this week we noted the one-year mark in the most recent iteration of the Israel-Palestinian war, and you wanted to address some of that in terms of how public radio meets these moments.
Well, you know, I have been with public radio, I now realize, for 50 years. And what keeps me coming back as a producer, a journalist, a listener, most importantly, and supporter, is this. Public radio and television consistently venture where no other media, no national commercial media, dare go. And so today, in that spirit, really, as we, you know, are here with the fall fun drive, you know, getting underway here at WJFF, I wanted to share clips that speak to this no easy soundbite, let's think about this, no choosing sides, just get into a clear conversation that puts our lives in context. Because really, right now, what's on the line has so much to do with our very lives and quality of life. So I'm sharing clips from two related shows that more people have called in about or stopped me in the street to talk about this past year than any other shows.
And you sat down with veteran ambassador Stuart Eisenstadt on one of those shows, speaking from personal experience as a member of President Jimmy Carter's team at the historic Camp David Accords in 1978. And in this clip, he illustrates the power of personal relationships in foreign policy.
Creativity is crucial. That's why I call it the art of negotiation. When you reach an impasse, being able to come up with a compromise that's really critical. And then preparation, knowing your issues, but also the others' issues so that you can find areas of compromise and then leverage your positives and negatives, trade incentives, trade benefits. In the case of the UAE's agreement during the Trump administration with Israel, giving them F-35 fighter jets, but also using negative leverage if you have to in negotiations. For example, economic sanctions against a country. The ultimate negative, of course, is military force. And I devote a substantial part of my book to examining the problems we've had in using military force, which works in some cases. It worked, for example, in Bosnia and Kosovo in the Balkan Wars with President Clinton. But it certainly didn't work in Vietnam. It didn't work in Afghanistan. It didn't work in Iran, didn't work in Libya. Key is knowing the culture and history and internal politics of the country before you invade. And here's the mistake that Israel has made in Gaza. Hamas is a threat to their existence without question. But before you shoot the first bullet, one of the points I make in my book, and Iraq is a good example, Gaza is a good example, you need to know, Janice, what the end political result is going to be. And then you build your military strategy around that rather than the other way around. And we often get it backward.
That's Ambassador Stuart Eisenstadt appearing on the Janice Adams Show. Ambassador Eisenstadt, now retired, was appointed by President Biden to chair the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum Council. Another clip that you wanted to share with us was your conversation with Laura Flanders.
Oh, our dear Laura Flanders, absolutely. You know, how do we talk about the Israel-Hamas war as journalists, as historians? We, you know, use words like objective and well-sourced and fairness doctrine and that we have to cover both sides. But when the war broke out between Israel and Palestine, the journalist that I most wanted to have that conversation with was Laura Flanders. I love Laura's tagline for her show, the TV and radio show where the people who say it can't be done take a backseat to the people who are doing it.
Here's Laura Flanders.
I came to journalism not through journalism school. I came through experience, through journalists in my family, and through wanting to go where the action was. So in the 1980s, I spent a lot of time in war zones. Northern Ireland, I did go to the Middle East, Central America, you name it. I found ways to get there, often as a photographer, ironically. I went with a group called Madre, which supports women's organizations around the world, and went as their photographer for their fundraising appeals. Appeals used to go in the mail, and you would receive those pictures, and sometimes those photographs were mine. So it was a way that I found to travel and to see places in conflict up for myself. Then I worked at FAIR, the Media Watch Group. I didn't go to journalism school, so I was not force-fed this notion of objectivity. I've never believed in it. I've always felt it was an illusion. We can't hope as people to be perfectly objective. We can hope to be fair. So I strive for fairness. And I strive for understanding, and I strive to do my research before I form my opinion, or at least to test my opinion with research, and ideally with going to the place that I'm reporting on. So all of that being said, how do you cover or talk about the situation in the Middle East from the Catskills? What we seem to be witnessing is the idea that you cannot simultaneously care for the Israelis and the Palestinians. But we can figure out how to do that. And we can figure out, I think, how to hold both in our hearts and to express that at a time when, for the most part, people are choosing a side. We love our binaries at every level, right? So you're either for this one or you're for that one. We also, and this is a much longer conversation, but I think we are hard up for models of responding to a grievance or to a pain or to a hurt that isn't military, that isn't carceral, that isn't punitive, that isn't vengeful. We know how to pick up a weapon. A lot of people have them in their homes in this country. We know how to look strong, and our leaders believe that they have to fight to show how strong they are. We don't have a lot of models of other stuff, of other ways of responding. So for me, when Josh Pauls wrote the letter that he did about why he resigned after 11 years dealing with arms transfers, he worked in the arms division of the State Department. 11 years have seen a lot of really dodgy arms transfers as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But this one pushed him too far, and he explained in his letter beautifully why. And that was, I felt, worth bringing to public attention because he did it. He wrote his letter. He made one appearance, brief appearance on public television, and I never saw him again.
It's almost unconscionable because that is not just a problem of our binaries. I love the way you say that. We love our binaries. But it's also our anti-expertise crisis that this country has been going through for too long. And so a man who had that depth of expertise and also was, to my mind, part of the problem and willing to be part of the problem, it was even too much for him.
That's right.
That's the part that makes it so extraordinary. I love the way you answered that question, going to really your own roots in this. You're talking about your being in war zones and particularly being in Ireland. So the Troubles, what did that tell you that you bring every place else you go since you've been part of that coverage?
Oh, well, you put your finger on it. I do believe I learned just about everything that is useful that you bring to my work in those years in Northern Ireland. You go to a place that you've been taught to be afraid of and people who you've been told to be afraid of your whole life. And you realize, oh, these very people have lessons to teach you that are invaluable. A lot of them had to do with the perspective from which you look at any given struggle and when you start the clock. So yes. If you start the clock on the story of Northern Ireland, for example, the latest bombing, an IRA bombing in Brighton, say, there was one that targeted conservative members of parliament during their convention. If you start the clock there, then the Irish are the problem. The terrorism is the problem. They would say, start the clock in the 1600s.
Absolutely.
And the same with Northern Ireland, the same with Belfast, and the same with Palestine, the same with Israel.
Yes.
Do you start the clock on October 7th, that horrendous terror attack by Hamas, or do you go back and say, what's the grievance that brought this situation about? What's the grievance that's been festering? And I think, you know, we all share a part in having thought we could just let this go on festering. We all do. We've all shared a part in allowing arms sales to the region and to the explosion of a military-industrial complex around the world that we are the leaders, as Americans, the leading force in. We've all played a part in that. And what were we thinking? That wouldn't explode eventually? That wouldn't boil over into this kind of hatred and war? I think that was my experience in Northern Ireland. Is there a roots here that go back way before where you start the clock is political? The idea of the Troubles in Britain, I mean, in Ireland, they call it the trouble with England.
We all have heard this is the Troubles. And of all things, it was the British who were referring to the people that they were trying to dominate as the problem.
And what kind of a word is Troubles? 3,000 people died in that conflict. Those were people dying daily in a small population on the streets of an urban area of the world of Western Europe. This was not Troubles. This was war. This was a grievance. When I arrived in Northern Ireland, there were troops on the streets and snipers on the rooftops, and Troubles is not the word I would have used.
That's Laura Flanders appearing on the Janice Adams Show, and Janice is with us. Janice, finally, an excerpt from Mark Twain. Why do you have this excerpt you want to let folks know about?
Well, yes. You know, this is about, we just heard Laura, this is about complexity and thinking deeper. And so I'm choosing this quote, eerily timely quote from Mark Twain about the French Revolution, published in 1889 from his book, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. And here I am reading that excerpt.
There were two reigns of terror, if we could but remember and consider it. The one wrought murder in hot passions, the other in heartless cold blood. The one lasted mere months, the other lasted 1,000 years. The one inflicted death upon 1,000 persons, the other upon 100 million. But our shudders are all for the horrors of the momentary terror, so to speak. Whereas, what is the horror of swift death by the axe compared with lifelong death from hunger, cold, insult, cruelty, and heartbreak? A city cemetery could contain the coffins filled by that brief terror that we have all been so diligently taught to shiver at and mourn over. But all France could hardly contain the coffins filled by that older and real terror, that unspeakable, bitter, and awful terror which none of us has been taught to see in its vastness or pity as it deserves. Mark Twain, writing about the French Revolution, 1889, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
And that's Janice Adams of the Janice Adams Show, which you can listen to every Saturday morning at 11. Janice, thank you so much for being here today with these reflections.
Thank you, Tim. And here's to public radio. Here we go.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with a new work and development at NACL in Highland Lake. Quick break for us. This is Radio Chatskill.
Okay, Apple Pie fans, this is it. Apple Pie Palooza is Saturday at Catskill Brewery in Livingston Manor. Don't miss homemade apple pies for sale, apple pie, and apple pie. You can still enter the pie contest at WJFFradio.org. But who wants to bake? Just come and get some pie. Radio Catskill's Apple Pie Palooza, the most apple-y of all paloozas. 3 to 6 Saturday at Catskill Brewery, Livingston Manor.
This is Radio Chatskill. God is in Your Typewriter is a new work in development by Bread Arts Collective member and artist and NACL Director of Artist Experience, Lindsay Anderson. She's here to tell us more about that work, which debuts Saturday at NACL. And she's brought along that Brett Kaiser guy from NACL as well. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Tim. What a pleasure to be here today.
Lindsay, tell us about this work in development. God is in Your Typewriter. What it's about?
Yes. Well, it's about Anne Sexton, and it's about the confessional poets of the 1960s in mid-century America. I was a theater and a poetry major in college. And so I'd been reading Anne Sexton for years, but about a year ago, a local Sullivan County poet, Laura E.J. Moran, pointed out that I really resemble Anne Sexton in a lot of ways, physically. So that sent me down the rabbit hole. I wrote it in a semi-fugue state. It came out of me really fast, and my theater company, Bread Arts Collective, is helping me mount it. We've been together for about 12 years, so they've come up here to join me, and we're all best friends, and we all have what I would call a considerable amount of talent, but I think what's most evident when you come to a Bread show is that we all really care about each other a lot.
So on the website, it says that the work follows the path of Anne Sexton, her battle with mental illness, and the lifelong obsession with death. So what part of that are you attracted to?
Well, I'm really attracted to what I consider the paradoxical element in all humans. A lot of these confessional poets, they were the life of the party, so to speak. They were very charismatic people, but they all seem to have a deep fascination with their own mortality. I don't necessarily identify with that, but I consider myself a pretty introverted person, but my art is quite extroverted, so I really like exploring those semi-contradictions, the paradoxes within all of us.
And NACL always bringing us great work in development, a lot of it, which is great to see because the audience can have sometimes a participation in how it comes out.
Yeah.
Are you looking for that kind of feedback in this work this time around, or are you just kind of looking to see more of how it plays for you?
Yeah, I think we just want to give a really good show. Brett is really used to having a short period of time to churn out a tremendous amount of material, and we're going to be ready, and we're just there to give people a really fascinating, reflective, and funny evening. So if people want to tell us what they think, we welcome it. But we're here for everybody to just entertain and reveal.
Brett, let's get the details about God is in Your Typewriter on Saturday.
Yeah, this is going to be showing on Saturday at 7:30. You can get tickets at nacl.org. And if you haven't seen Bread Arts Collective before, you want to check this out. I think this is their fourth time
show that we've been at NACL, yeah.
Some construction.
Brett's always kind of challenging the possible and stretching the reality, right?
Yes, yes. That is our tagline on our website.
Challenging the typical, that's it.
Yes. I would say come early. We're not going to be able to do any late seating, and I expect it's going to be packed to the gills. So if you're interested in coming, we welcome it, but do try and come early so you can get a seat.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just want to reiterate that their performances are full of fire at whatever stage they're at, beginning, middle, end. It's something to behold.
And Lindsay, you know, we mentioned you're the director of artist experience, usually helping those artists who are coming to NACL
to
practice their work. Now you're front and center. How do you feel about that?
It feels great. You know, I think one of the greatest things that NACL has going for it is that we're all artists. So it's wonderful to be able to kind of step into the spotlight this time after so many weeks of service. It's a blessing, and I feel quite grateful for the position that I'm in here.
God is in Your Typewriter is a new work in development at NACL. They're going to debut Saturday. A dramatized glimpse into the lives of the confessional poets and novelists of 1960s America. A world of words, sex, booze, and thousands of cigarettes.
That's right.
There you go.
Which we should say will not be lit.
Yeah. Everything else will be lit, though.
That's Saturday at NACL. There's more information at nacl.org. And thank you to Brett Kaiser and Lindsay Anderson from NACL. And
thank you, Tim.
We appreciate you being here. Good luck. Break a leg.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
Thanks, Tim.
It.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Again, a reminder that our election coverage continues this evening with a live debate between U.S. Representative Mark Molinaro and his Democratic rival, Josh Riley. This is for New York's 19th congressional district. It's one of the most competitive districts in the country. Listen live tonight at 7 here on Radio Catskill or stream it at wjffradio.org. Next Tuesday, the 22nd, we'll be bringing you the debate between Matt Cartwright and Robert Bresnahan in Pennsylvania's 8th congressional district. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan County's Community Bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill's annual music sale is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and we still need donations of high-quality vinyl, super clean discs, indecent jackets, collectible pop, rock, and jazz records, as well as genres that we don't often see at the sale, hip-hop, heavy metal, and experimental records. And what we need more than anything else is you, a collector who has cared for your records and would like to see them go to a good home. If you're a collector who needs to downsize, email feedback at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for one small step, pairing up strangers to have conversations, not debates. Remind the country of the humanity in all of us. Sign up at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Just a quick correction. I think I said the 22nd is next Tuesday. That's actually in 2 weeks for that PA 8th Congressional District debate. Now, today's weather, shower still possible, otherwise sunny, breezy, cooler, high of only 49. Tonight, clear, there could be, frost. There's actually a frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight until 9 a.m. Friday in portions of central New York and northeast Pennsylvania in our listening area. To take care of your tender plants outdoors. Tonight's low getting down to 38, possibly 36 in some areas. Sunny, milder tomorrow, high of 61. It's 11 o'clock.